Hello, welcome to Conversations. My name is Kayleen Welsh, and I am your host for this episode. And I'm happy to be joined today by Mandy Herrick. And I'm going to let Mandy introduce herself to you guys, but I'm intrigued and invited her into this conversation to talk about movement. So hi there, Mandy. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Kayleen. It's nice to be here.
All right. So, you know, I guess I got intrigued by the idea of movement. I mean, it's been something I've been aware of for a while, and I know that I've had my own struggles with connecting with my body. So it is as I've gotten older, I'm really become aware of how important movement is. And I think that that's one of the things that I think that you can bring and help us understand a little bit more of what all movement does for us. But let's start with just kind of a general idea of, like, who are you and where'd you come from and what are you doing here?
So I guess movement has been a part of my life since, well, movement's been a part of all of our lives since in utero, really. And then, of course, when we were babies and everything. But for me personally, yeah, I started dancing when I was 4. I was always a tree climber, pretty active in all those different ways. And then, I just was active in dance and sports and stuff throughout my childhood.
Are you from the area here?
I'm not. I moved here about 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want me to start with, like,
sure,
the Viroqua area? Well,
sure.
I was born in Iowa, Cedar Rapids, and then moved to suburban Minneapolis, and then I kind of grew up mostly in Eau Claire.
Okay. Well, and I'm an Iowa girl, too,
okay.
So I can appreciate that. Okay. All right. Tri-state area.
Yeah. And then I moved on, went to school, undergrad at Luther College here in Decorah, or over there in Decorah, and then went out to Western Massachusetts, and then came back to the Midwest. And
well, it looked like, you know, as I did a little bit of looking around on your history or biography and such, but yeah, graduated from Luther, performing arts?
Yeah, I have a degree in English and dance. Theater
okay.
dance, but yeah.
Well, it seems like that, you know, was a start in some ways to bringing you to where you are now, but I wasn't sure where that performance piece exactly fit, but it seems like that's been a part that's been emerging in your work. But
yeah.
Luther grad, I mean, you know, that's, I've got nieces that have gone to
okay.
Luther, good school.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah. All right.
Yeah. I can talk more about that degree or I can keep going with my background or whatever you're interested
wherever
in.
Wherever you want to go. You go next. Yeah.
As far as dance goes, I mean, I did ballet all through high school and was pretty rigid, and then thought I didn't want to dance anymore. But then I went to school, undergrad, and found modern dance, and that became a whole new form of movement. And it also opened up to these questions of, like, what movement really is and how we as people embody movement in our lives. So the program shifted into this movement fundamentals idea, which was pretty groundbreaking for us undergrad dance majors, because we just want to be told what to do and look at ourselves in the mirror and then perform it. My professor, Jane Hawley, was like, actually, we're going to, like, look how your alignment is. Let's look and see and be more aware of our conscious bodies and evaluate ourselves in that way. So we would be checking our feet alignment, our spinal alignment, how we're moving in space, and it became more functional. And she brought into these modalities called Feldenkrais and Skinner Release and all these different somatic modalities that as dancers we hadn't heard of yet, but it was a way for us to be more educated and intelligent in our bodies. So we were able to think from the inside out instead of the outside in.
Would you define somatic?
Yeah. Somatic refers to the body, the way we experience the body from within. It's a term that a man named Thomas Hanna came up with in the 70s, and he was like a philosopher and a movement educator and started just doing more and more research around how we can be more intelligent with our bodies and be more aware and instead of just the mind telling what the body to do, how can the body inform the mind a little bit more?
Well, I find that very fascinating because even just in psychotherapy and ideas mm-hmm. around that, we're seeing a resurgence of an awareness of the body.
Yeah,
of the
totally.
Importance of the body as a carrier for mm-hmm. all of this experience. And so I'm appreciating even the term functional movement. It just feels, for me anyway, it seems like movement was one of those, the body was one of those things that you kind of like, I don't know, just kind of set aside somewhere because you really were more attentive to mind and what do I need to do and, you know, how do I show up and some of these things. But I think many of us, and I don't know, as I have worked in psychotherapy with a lot of women, I think many of us have had difficult relationships with our bodies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I could talk a lot about that too.
Okay, dive in. No, there's so much to share, isn't
there?
Yeah.
I mean, just to go back a little bit about how, just as a society and a culture, especially in the United States, how we consider the body as a container and as a thing that is just, we're like kind of hauling around the street, you know, like that we're just.
Don't like much.
No, and that we don't have much relationship with.
In fact, it hurts or, you
know,
it doesn't.
Yeah, we're complaining about it a lot. And, you know, it just seems like it's normalized to just be kind of wanting to shape and redirect constantly how we want our body to look and to feel and to be. And so I feel like over the years, it's this somatic education I've received is like, well, what is my body really telling me? And can it be an objective feeling where it's like, oh, I'm not shaming it or blaming it. I'm not putting all this emotion onto it. But what if it has its own thought process? And can we give a mind to those body systems? You know, the organs, the lymph system, the ligaments, the bones, all those things have their own internal intelligence. And that might seem super woo-woo, but. Though I've also studied this this modality called body-mind centering, where really the approach is the physical tissues and the cells, and everything has a mind of its own. And if we can step into that a little bit and just listen and be with our bodies, not against them, or pushing them in a direction, then we might find a new place for our minds to be, too.
That just sounds like a really, I don't know, like such a huge shift and yet such an important one, like foundational. Like until we can really like shift into this body awareness and an appreciation of really, I don't know, the miraculousness, the majesty, the incredible function of all of these different parts of our body. I don't know, it's pretty amazing really when you break it down and start thinking about all that the body really does for us.
Yeah, totally. And it takes that moment of just of breath and listening and quiet to kind of just be like, oh, where are my feet on the ground? Do I feel the ground under my feet? Do I feel myself breathing? Can I feel my skin touching the air? You know, like bringing in that kind of cellular awareness a little bit every day brings us that much closer to kind of, yeah, you can call it a holiness or maybe just a very special place that we live within our bodies. We're not just a mind trapped inside.
Well, and I appreciate the word holiness. And to me, if we need to take the, you know, any spiritual context out of that, that's also wholeness. Mm. You know, where all of our systems are functioning on
absolutely
a similar level and coming together. And as a holistic therapist, again, I always think, you know, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, and how do we bring all that together? And it's interesting to me as I've worked with people in emotion, they often don't tune into emotion until it reaches a mental level sort of intensity where I've come to understand that it starts down here in the body. And if we could just be tuning into that, we can kind of get ahead of some of that emotion or be with it in a different way.
Yeah.
So
or
important.
Just even the fine tuning of like, where am I feeling it? You know,
right.
Like is it in my gut? Is it in my shoulder? Is it in my neck? You know, and not having to fix it, but just becoming aware of that as we go throughout the day that maybe it's not always like, oh, I slept wrong or I did this, but it's like actually, you know, it's physical tissue that's in the stress response or it's in a different response, a grieving or, you know, joy or something that's the body can hold. In that way.
Well, it sounds like your background in training or all your work in this has brought you to a different understanding of body than most of us have. So, I don't know, where do we start to, how do you share that? How do you help us open up to this relationship a little differently?
Yeah, I feel like in different ways. So I work artistically. I also work functionally with people doing one-on-one sessions. Just this year, I've been working with children more and working with movement and how that can help academic learning and behavioral shifting, because all that's in the body as well.
Ooh, that sounds like another topic.
Another
to talk
topic,
more about.
I know. But artistically, for sure, so I'll just back up. I teach children just dance education, kind of in this lens of creative dance, but also contemporary dance. And then I work with two other collaborators in town, Rufus Jupiter and Anna Jo Dorr. And the three of us are a performance group, and so we've traveled around and done kind of site-responsive, we call it site-responsive somatic performance. So it's dance under the umbrella of dance, but it's all improvised and it's all felt conscious movement that in relationship to the landscape has a very strong potency about it. So it's less about cool tricks or like cool moves and things like that, and more about like what does it feel like to be a body in this specific space.
That's fascinating in its own right. I spent the weekend, or part of the weekend, at a retreat with Dwight Zitlow, who, of course, a lot of people in the area know, with his wild crafting efforts. And one of the things that he said was, when we partake of these plants and things around us, it supports our connection with this greater natural world. And it sounds like, in many ways, that's kind of what you're saying, even with like the landscaping events. That somehow or other that our presence in those spaces is, speak to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we call ourselves We Dances Movement Collaborative because the we in that is everything around us. It's the human body, it's the plants, it's even the concrete, it's the people, it's self, it's space, and it's all of us together. So that's how we form our physical response to that moment in a performance setting. So there's quite a lot going on when we perform and how we're relating to the environment and to each other, and even in response to who's watching as an audience. So, yeah, and we've performed in many different ways. We formed as a group during COVID when everything shut down, and I just kind of called a bunch of people into the parking lot over on the tech college there. It was just like this open space. We danced and moved 6 feet apart with, you know, we didn't even have masks yet, so it was just bandanas around our mouths and didn't know. There was so much unknown that in March 2020, so we were just like, we need to keep moving. How can we do this? And then we just kind of stayed in that question place. How can we, what is the score? A score is like a framework of kind of loose rules in a improvisational setting. So like, here's the score. We're 6 feet apart. We're going to stay in unison. So, and we're going to watch each other. The score is called flocking. Flocking like birds. So one person begins a movement and you keep it pretty simple, and then everyone else is following that. And so the leader changes as the direction of the movement changes. But to see and feel that as a community feels really potent and important in that moment. And then you have the landscape around you that kind of frames it all and supports it all. So we started in a parking lot, and then we initiated a project called Sightsee. And that was still deep in COVID, where we had a sign-up sheet and people, audience members, could sign up on a Wednesday or a Sunday during this time, and they chose the site. So they chose the environment to hold us. Sometimes it was like on a bike path, or it was at Eckerd Park, or it was in their backyard. And we showed up 45 minutes before and just kind of got a little lay of the land, and then we performed for 45 minutes, and that was it. It was a wonderful way to keep and start performing as a group in these different sites, and how different each performance was because of how we showed up and the environment informing so much of the movement.
That's when I remember really noticing your work, I think, because that was intriguing to me, that whole idea of somebody just saying, hey, you know, come into my space and do this thing. And so can you speak to what happens in those spaces?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's... this is where the wildness of the body can kind of help. You know, you're maybe in a really wild setting with plants, or even just, you know, like a landscape that's a wilderness. And the feeling of like, what am I hearing? How do I open up my senses to this? What am I smelling? What am I hearing? What am I touching? You know, turning that thinking brain off and just being like, what am I sensing in this moment? How is my body moving? If it's just so subtle, what is that happening? What is my breath doing? How am I relating right now in this moment to that? And that's kind of how we started. And so taking that in, it's just, and then it's like, okay, now I'm going to open my eyes. A lot of times we worked eyes closed, and then it's, what is my partner doing? Bringing in the visual a little bit more. So it's really, it's just an awareness of those that kind of wild place inside of you that maybe isn't feeling wild, but it is. That
sounds almost like it's wanting freedom.
Yeah, or just to be seen, just a recognition mm-hmm. of the processes and the systems that have been in place for us, and what they have to say, instead of the mind making it work. So that's how we always start, and that's always our intention. And then, of course, it's not just a body, it's a mind. So then we do, there's a lot of that exchange. Then it's like, okay, are we flowing this direction or that direction? How are we using space, you know, using different levels? How are we using touch, if we're using contact or not? And maybe not. Sometimes the stillness is the most effective and the right choice in that moment. And as a viewer, there's so much stimulation just seeing and feeling in your own body as an audience member, because just by being still and watching someone else embody themselves, it makes you want to do the same. You mirror that. And that's what we want for our audience members, is to feel that same way.
It sounds like in some ways the process brings body and mind together, which then releases, would we say, inherent wisdom? I mean, kind of like just this deeper core somewhere inside. Something else emerges.
I think that's the goal with, you know, these mind-body practices. It's easy to kind of like, okay, if I'm going to turn off my mind, I'm only going to follow my body. Well, that's maybe not effective either. It's like, how do they inform each other, and how do we become more aware of who's talking the loudest, and how they're, it's okay to use both. You know, sometimes it's like, well, actually, this isn't a good choice that my body wants to mm-hmm. do right now. So I'm going to let my mind kind of take over for that one, you know? So and that's just in a pragmatic way, but like in an artistic way, how do you really notice both of them working independently or together is a enriching place to be.
One of the things that's intriguing too about this performance art in different spaces is, I don't know, it just seems like, what does that do to the space?
Yeah, right. Absolutely. We, totally. That's another goal, is to how to activate a space. Part of my interest in a lot of the We Dances work, we like forgotten places, you know, places that are not seen anymore. We don't like working in refined public areas that have already been painted or redone or like look fresh, you know. I mean, those are beautiful spaces too, but also, you know, like an old warehouse, or like we did a piece called Still Awake in the back alley behind Utopia a number of years ago. It's just so, there's so much life there that isn't seen. And when you bring intentional movement and performance into a space like that, you see things that you hadn't seen before, maybe, or you feel things that maybe a memory that you've had, you know, like you're having a different experience than when you usually walk through a space like that not paying attention to.
That's all very interesting. It is time for us to take a little station break, so let's take a moment, and I just want to say thanks for tuning in to WDRT Community Radio out of Viroqua, Wisconsin. This show is Conversations. We're here every Thursday morning with a rotating series of hosts offering different conversations with about different things in the community or of interest, and every show is different and unique. So thank you for tuning in, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Conversations, and my name is Kayleen Welsh, and I'm here with Mandy Herrick, and we're talking about dance and movement and the body. And we're also, we were talking just before we went on break about dancing and bringing this energetic connection, I think, to some forgotten spaces. And I'm just intrigued about that whole idea. It just feels like, to me, that feels like reclaiming something in those spaces. Or can you speak to that just a little more?
Sure. I can talk about, we did a piece at Magpie, which is not a forgotten place. Magpie is this awesome gelato place downtown. Not a forgotten place, but then I can also talk about working in a wetland, which is, I consider, a natural forgotten place. And the politics and around that is fascinating. But yeah, we did a piece in Magpie at night, maybe 3 years ago now, where we kind of transformed the whole space. And this was more like physically transforming. We brought in stage lights and kind of put them all around, and it was dark out, and we had a projector, and we did projected images of a stream, and we layered our bodies into that. So it was... the piece was about the gut, actually, and following our gut. And so we called it Momentum Following the Gutscape. I can't even remember the name of it, but it was about, we call it the Gutscape piece. Okay. So like a landscape, but a gutscape. And ironically, in a cafe, seemed like the right place to do that. Yeah, we worked in that way, in that space, a couple. We did that show a few times, and people came in the front door and left through the back door. So really embodying the gut as a place where we take in new information and we let go of old things. And in between those places, we process what we need and what we don't need. Mm-hmm. So literally looking at the gut as a system that has a high amount of intelligence. I mean, we have more research on the enteric nervous system now that, you know, we have more neurons in our gut than we do in our brain. So really honoring that system in this performance way. This performance could be done in any setting, I think, but it was a perfect place at Magpie, just the way that that cafe is so visible to the public, but also just the way the front door and the back door are arranged, that it was like people are coming through, they have an experience inside that cafe with us moving, and then they leave out the back. So they're kind of left with this like, oh, how am I embodying my gut? What did that just feel like?
Mm-hmm. So the movement almost becomes more almost like metaphorical, or it takes people on a journey of their own inner process.
Totally. Absolutely.
That's fascinating, really.
Yeah. And that's what we hope to do with our work, is to have the audience be part of it in that way, is that it's not just cool to look at, but like they are actually taking that work with them and it's happening in that present time. And of course, as far as activating a space and transforming the energy of a place, that's what this performance did too, is it really made that whole cafe feel differently to everyone, whether they wanted to feel that or not.
So am I hearing you say then too that the performance or the activity in there in some way shifts the vibration of a space?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And it's just always a question. It's not like we're going to do this, but I feel like living in that and moving in that question space helps guide us a lot more, where it's like, you know, what if we added this to it, or what if we were connecting in this way, and what happens when we embody our guts, or we embody some part of us, how does that transform the space, and how does that transform the other people in the room and their awareness of their own systems? Yeah.
And then I think energy movement. So where does it ripple forward to, or where does it ripple onward to?
Right. I had a friend that came. She was actually head of the dance department at Winona State, and she came down and watched it. And she, too, was just like, oh, I feel like I've got this whole new relationship with my gut right now, right here. And so she took that work and that experience back to her dance department, or her life, and how that shapes what she does, you know. I mean, it's different for everybody, but it's exciting when you hear those different responses.
Well, it's interesting, too, because you used the word earlier, you know, not wanting to go be too woo-woo, and I totally appreciate that all the time. And yet, I'm so intrigued by the fact that science is moving into these woo-woo spaces.
Totally. It's taken time, but yeah, I do watch that happen a little bit. It may, and how they're measuring that is interesting, and I mean, I think it's just more like the neurology, or the nervous system work is finally being researched enough that it's showing up in that way, even though we knew it and trusted it before that, is a fascinating thing.
So let's go back and talk a little bit more about just overall then, I guess I want to say the benefit of movement. In some ways, I think about the human body, and as I watch people and have, you know, worked with people over the years, I often see, like, I just almost want to say this rigidity that develops. And, you know, there's a lack of fluidity or something, which does not seem beneficial to people at all. So, you know, it seems like movement is one of the antidotes to that, to keep things flowing and keep things moving. So, share with us something about that.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thing, too, how we are with our bodies through our whole lives. You know, I go back to, like, infancy, and when, you know, watch an infant move, and they're just so fluid. They can reach down and get anything off the floor. They can get down on the floor. They can get up. You know, so they're toddlers, kind of like phasing into that toddlerness. But, you know, 0 to 12 months, these babies are learning so much just in their, like, cognition, but also so much in how their bodies work. And that's the most fascinating place to start, is like, wow, I can roll over. I can put weight on one side and do something with the other side, or I can reach with my head. And so that fluidity really starts in our very early years, and we lose it because we're not using it, is one way of looking at it. But yeah, we're a society of chairs, and a society of sitting, and of in cars, and we know we're just, that modern world is not stopping, that pace is not stopping. You know, we can connect with people and communicate with people in all kinds of ways, all the time, at every second of the day. We don't have to go and knock on someone's door anymore to have a conversation. We can, you know, use the phone, or we can call, or we can text, or we can, you know, whatever, how many social medias you can have, and messaging. You know, there's just so many ways of communicating. I feel like that alone keeps us stationary. So what helps us, what can we take away, or what can we add into our lives that allows us to find more movement in a way to connect? Because humans want to connect. We're never going to lose that. That's like our superpower, is we need each other. We're like a pack. We're pack animals. So how community is that solution, really, is like how we keep showing up together. And maybe that's in a movement way, but it's just like, how do we get to each other? How do we kind of foreground more of the ways of being face-to-face, and communicating that way? That's just one little branch of your question.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fitness world is out there, and that's a great way, too. I think that also there's a lot of barriers that can come up for people, like, well, I won't be able to do X, Y, Z, so I'm not even going to start. Or I see this person in that fitness class, there's no way I'm going to be able to do it because look at their body, you know? And so how do we start in our own homes? How do we start feeling comfortable with gravity, feeling comfortable with the floor. How do we feel comfortable moving our arms? Just simple things that can empower us to feel like we are in our bodies again.
Yeah, that's a really big question or big topic for me. I think that's the reason that I even, you know, got interested in talking to you more again, because I recognize how much I am sedentary, you know, how much, and as I've gotten older, how much of an impact that that's had on my body. And one of the things that I really realized this winter was, you know, I work from home, so I pretty much get up, you know, go to the table at breakfast or something, go sit at the desk. I mean, there's not a lot of other movement. And I recognized just how much difficulty that was causing me. So, you know, I kind of made a plan and went to Mexico for a month, but got walking. Mm-hmm. And again, I started feeling better. Mm-hmm. You know, just that ability, I don't, you know, whether it, the combination of the walking and the outdoors, the fresh air, the sunshine, all of those things just helped me feel so much better. And it just echoes through my mind, you know, an object at rest stays at rest. An object in motion stays in motion. And so as I've aged, I've struggled to stay in motion. Any guidance or thoughts on how I can help myself keep moving?
I totally relate to this. You know, I have three kids and I live in town, which was a priority for us because we didn't want to drive and kind of fall in that more sedentary thing. So we, you know, when our kids were young, I just put them in a stroller, or like, you know, put them in a carrier with my dog, and I only got groceries only by foot, so I could put all my groceries in the stroller. And I had to get groceries, I mean, a million times a day, right? But it's like, I had to, you know, every few days I'd be going to the co-op or something or somewhere in Walgreens or something to get something, and it was always by foot. I had that time and that luxury. I wasn't working, so I was able to, like, that's what we did today is we, with cute little kids, it takes 45 minutes to just get out the door. So that was, you know, for 10 years, that was a lot of my movement, was just getting places with my kids and those necessary survival things that we need, putting them a little bit of out of reach. So then I'm like, I'm not going to drive there. I have the time to take that walk. And that became completely standard in my day. I think that helped. Now that my kids are older and so much more busy, I'm working and more busy, I drive to the co-op all the time. It's harder for me to find those walking moments. It's harder, and I find myself more sedentary, and it's like, I'm getting more work done if I can just sit and do this thing, you know? So now I'm like having to put that back in. I teach dance, but that's pretty isolated. Half the time when I'm teaching, I'm actually just watching them move and not move because I've demonstrated already and now I'm watching them. So I'm like, wow, there's a shift going on here, and I'm finding that pull, you know, into my mid-late 40s here of like, oh, like I need to be a little more conscious of, you know, maybe putting a pull-up bar in like, you know, in a space that I walk through every day. This is a Katie Bowman hack, if anyone knows Katie Bowman. She's a biomechanist, has a bunch of books out about how to just make movement more alive in your daily life. I remember I used to put like our drinking water, our filter down low, so I'd have to squat down to get it. We had a pull-up bar in our door frame, and so whenever you walk through it, you just hang or you reach up and get it, you know, like how to get movement into your daily life. So it's visual and you see it and you don't forget about it, instead of like, oh, dang it, I didn't do XYZ aerobics this morning, or I didn't do my stretches this morning or something, because then that comes back at you and you feel worse about yourself.
So it sounds like you're saying some of the suggestion really is to just really incorporate more movement into your life, structure your life in a way that, you know, if you can, like, you know, you walk to the store or you do make points to bend down and pick things up. Or
right.
So you put it in just, again, just kind of generalized, this is my day and I'm going to be moving, and rather than prescribed.
I think that that's the way it works for me better. Some people really are good at going to the gym, and that's, if that works for you, that's great.
I wish that worked for me. I haven't done that very well.
I haven't either. It's kind of worked against me many times. I did actually listen to a podcast recently by Katie Bowman, and she was saying all we need each day is 9 minutes of vigorous exercise. And so 9 minutes could be like taking the stairs. That can be a minute. playing basketball with your kid, another minute. You know, it adds up actually pretty quickly. Vigorous being like it gets your heart rate up. But even moderate, you know, what is moderate to you? It's not as much as we think. But doing it on a like a snack, you know, like a movement snack every day, it's like nutrients for our body.
It's interesting to me because I think I kind of raised with the concept that movement was exercise and exercise wasn't fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so shifting that whole philosophy even that, you know, my body is made to move and to keep moving and I don't know, moving it is, how do I move it in ways that are just like, allow it to move and enjoy it
right.
and have fun with it.
Yeah. And what does it feel like to just do like 5 arm circles each day? Or what if I start on the floor this morning and can I get up without using my hands? If I can't do it today, then I'm like, how am I going to, like, maybe I use a little bit of my energy to, or my upper body to help me up. How do we start working towards that? Or, you know, it doesn't have to be like a big, I'm going to the gym every day and now I feel successful.
Yeah, part of that feels like it is like some expectation of, you know, I'm doing this for a purpose. So I, you know, either I need to lose weight or I need to,
right.
you know, increase muscle. So, you know, this little thing isn't going to do anything. I have to do something big. And yet it sounds like, again, these little movements can really add up and make a difference for
us. Yeah, because at the end of the day, you know, it's like awesome when you feel like you want to lose so many pounds and then it's like you go and you do it. Mm-hmm. Can you sustain that? Great, if you can. Most people can't. It's really hard. And it feels really good when you've, you know, gotten to the goal you want to get at. But at the end of the day, really, we just want to feel good in our bodies. We want to have mobile joints. We want to not feel achy and out of breath and fatigued. That and I feel like what is it? What the question is like how much movement does that take in a day? And where it doesn't feel like I need to have a check off of like, okay, I did this many squats and I did this many burpees and whatever. Like I think not that that's a bad thing. Like that's awesome. Go for it. But like, you know, everyone's starting at a different place with it. So what if I walk to the store instead of driving today? Do I have that time? What does it feel like? It felt awful when I did it. Okay, so maybe that's my goal this week is to make it not feel awful. or yeah, like I'm putting things on the floor more so I have to get them. Or, you know, little hacks throughout the day of where you are doing something different with your body that you haven't before. It feels different.
And in many ways, kind of shifting that mindset, you know, to appreciating the body or working with the body or just kind of recognizing that it's an important part of our overall system. So rather than, I don't know, something that is just kind of a difficult thing that we drag along behind
right,
us.
Right, right, right. Yeah, and it's to have baby steps with it, you know, because I think it's easy just to feel shut down as well.
I used to work for a while with a mentor, and I'd go to these retreats that she'd host, and it was so comical to me because she would always, like at different break times or whatever, she'd put on some music and she'd want everybody to dance. She'd just like get up and loosen up and dance. And it was so funny to watch myself in that process and other people around me because most of the time people were very inhibited with that. You know, it started out when I first started attending some of these events, you know, I'm looking around to see what everybody else is doing and everybody else. Some people are just still sitting there. Some people will decide to get up and dance, you know, just a little bit of wiggle maybe or something. But it was just interesting because as I went back over time, I saw that open up differently. And I recognized even for myself how good it felt to be able just to move different parts of my body that I don't think I'd really allowed to move before, or the freedom of that. And so in some ways, that's probably one of the pieces that's opened me up to movement. And yet talk about woo-woo. I mean, you know, here then we come to a place called ecstatic dance.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'd never heard of before, and yet at the same time felt like kind of, again, very woo-woo and like, oh my God, people are just out there going crazy or something, or, you know, the name, the word was a little bit off-centering to me. But at the same time, there's something that's so free about being able just to listen to some music and let your body respond in whatever way it feels right to respond to that.
Mm-hmm. And so much of people's inability or not wanting to move freely that way is their own judgment, feeling judged, feeling watched. That's like 90% of it, you know? And so then people often at dance parties, they'll use alcohol to kind of like, you know, turn that part off so they don't have to feel that way. And then they feel like they can dance. So that's what's great about ecstatic dances. It's an alcohol-free, drug-free zone where everyone's there to move and nobody is judging you because it's everyone's there in a and people can be there for healing purposes, but also just to move and feel good. And it's just it's a nice, safe place for people to start moving without that kind of vulnerability piece.
I hope that we kind of start to see a little bit of resurgence of dance. I think, you know, I know my parents used to go dancing when they were younger couples, and it seems like there's just not a lot of places that offer dance the way that we used to. We can go to a wedding dance, you know, a wedding maybe and get to dance, but where else do you dance? And so I'd like to see some resurgence of that. And I guess that means it's time for another break. So again, thank you for listening to Conversations on WDRT Community Radio 91.9 FM. The show airs every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Rotating hosts, my name is Kayleen Welsh, and I hope you tune in this week and every Thursday from now on. If you miss the show live, you can always catch it on the archives at wdrt.org, or you can stream it there if you're out of radio range. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back to Conversations. I'm Kayleen Welsh, and I'm here with Mandy Herrick, and we're talking about our bodies and movement. And we were just talking before break about dance and, you know, the benefits of dance and also sometimes the lack of availability of places to dance. So thoughts on that, Mandy? It sounds like there's a couple of places in the area here that
Yeah, luckily we have Moonlighter Lab, which opened in the last year as really a place for dance parties, but they have DJs, live DJs, and they train DJs.
Here in Viroqua?
Yep, here in Viroqua, right on Main Street. I'm not sure what their schedule is. You can go on Instagram and find all their stuff there, but they have dance parties and they host them, and it's a really great space to just feel free and to move your body. Fridays and Saturdays, there's different events each of those days.
Awesome. Well, I know there's lots of things that we could talk about, and I'm curious to know a little bit more about your work, how you are currently working, and how people can engage or learn, or you know what you can share with us that's really helpful for our lives moving forward.
Right now, I split my time between two different jobs. I've been directing and founded Bodies of Water Movement Arts. And so that's my kind of artistic teaching. So I work with youth and, you know, even like a parent, caregiver, child class, all the way up to 13-year-olds. And we work in kind of a creative movement, creative dance approach when they're young. And then as they get older, it's more contemporary dance. And we just finished our spring session a couple weekends ago where they got to have an informal showing of what they did. But so I've done that teaching probably for 10 years here.
So those are like group sessions that people can engage in.
Yeah, private. Yeah, kind of like not school related. And then this year I started working at Pleasant Ridge doing somatic movement education with different students as a kind of a developmental movement specialist. So I work with children that are, kind of the broad range of like maybe they just have some movement needs, like they're really jumpy in class or they can't sit in their chairs or, you know, they have maybe loud outbursts sometimes in class and maybe it's a behavioral thing. You know, the teacher and I work together on kind of puzzle piecing some of these things together. So what we're going back to is just like the developmental movements that they may or may not have totally totally completed. So when babies are born, they're just relating to gravity, and there's all these primitive reflexes that happen in that in utero and then in the first few months of life. And those are like smaller movements that are like the ABCs of these bigger developmental movements.
Foundational pieces.
Yeah. So I work a little bit with primitive reflexes as well, and they support these bigger movements. So it's just how we're relating to the floor and how we're relating to gravity in that way, and how we're reaching out into the world and how we're bringing all of our limbs back in, how we're dividing the body in half from right and left and doing like a belly crawl, which is what babies, these are all things that babies do. They crawl on their belly and then they push back and forth from their upper body to their lower body. And then they start crawling. There's lots of other different phases that they do before that. But if they don't crawl and if they're not rolling and if they're not doing kind of XYZ developmental patterns before that, sometimes there's gaps in the mind, we could say, or behaviorally, or like how we perceive the world a little bit.
Kind of glitches up the system.
A little bit, and it's hard to think creatively in an academic sense. It's hard to receive information and then put it down on paper. It's hard to just sit in your seat. It's hard to listen. It's hard to be part of the group. So we just go back and go through all those patterns, and it's amazing to see the body learn so fast and to repattern those gaps that happen with early life.
Can you speak to things that parents can do to support those things?
Oh, yeah, it's a curious place we are right now. Having been a parent, I know the pressures of what it is to be the only one at home, and having your child on the floor can be a difficult thing when you don't have the time, or you're like your baby's, you know, there's other things going on. You need to take a shower. But all the contraptions that we have for babies right now are not helping them move.
So like the play pens.
Yeah, the extra saucers, the bumbo seats, all those things confine movement, confine their hips. Even bundled up, lots of bundled up babies, as much as we want to keep them warm, we do. Having moments where their limbs can be free, even taking the diaper off. And just being okay with what happens, being on the floor with them, so they're still seeing and smelling you, but they know they're okay and safe, so they can reach that head up and they can bond with the earth and they can push with their bodies. That empowering sense of pushing through the earth is so important for babies. It's that sense of self that starts to grow.
It seems like almost there, even it begins to solidify that relationship of you being a natural part of the planet or something.
Yeah, it's your relationship to the earth. It's your relationship to what we live on, which is huge foundationally. If we don't have that, then we're floating. We don't know our boundaries. We're pushing against something that we don't see or know, and we're acting out. And we don't have that feeling of safety.
Right.
Gravity helps us feel safe. I mean, a caregiver's embrace helps us feel safe. So all those things are really crucial in those first 12 months. And so driving around, car seats, you know, we have to do them in these things. Can we do less of them? How can we be creative about, taking the baby out of the car seat and holding them more, or putting them on the ground, being with them so they can have that agency and really be able to navigate themselves in that space is huge, really huge. And it's incredible to see then if that hasn't happened, which I don't even know the percentage, but I would say it's probably a large part of our children today that maybe aren't getting all of that. And having done my training in this before I had babies, I have to say you feel that pressure of like, oh, it is really a thing to be the only primary caregiver and to really make sure that baby gets on the floor. And I just want to empower parents to like do it as much as you can. And as many minutes a day as you can get your baby on the floor with your child really, really matters if you can. So Yeah, we're working against, we're swimming upstream in this society right now with how things are.
And yet awareness is so important, which is, again, I think one of the reasons why it's so important to have these conversations.
Yes.
Because we can learn and we can understand and we can, it sounds like even right from the very get-go, our relationship with our body and movement is just so important, having the freedom to be able to move that. And it lays the foundation for the years to come. And, you know, as I am on the other end of that infant place, it's interesting to think about where movement has gone through the course of my lifetime. Mm. And I think it is just so valuable to figure out ways to keep it engaged.
Yeah.
And for me, I think, and maybe for some others, it's that mindset shift even of how do I make, you know, enjoy this movement? How do I make it something where I do feel solid and safe, where I'm not feeling like watched and judged because I'm, you know, not doing it so gracefully or something. But yeah, you know, I kind of feel a little bit of grief for that relationship.
Mm-hmm. And that's something great to just realize, the grieving of that. And then also the hope that's there too, of like, I'm still here. I'm still with here I am with my body. Here we are. And what can I do? And what can we do together? Change is always possible. And the body wants to heal. The body wants to move all the time.
I bought an e-bike. I'd really like to find somebody that would like to go bike riding with me, but I do look forward to finding, you know, ways to keep moving. Mm-hmm. I think it is important to keep moving.
Yeah.
So, well, this has been a very interesting conversation. And, you know, I know it was, you know, we're coming down to, you know, the latter part of it. So just, you know, what is it that you would really like to share with people? If you could really just say, hey, I got the world stage to talk about movement, and what do I really want people to know?
Yeah. I guess I'm trying to think of like all the wild spaces that we protect environmentally, and just such a good effort, and that our bodies are an ecosystem too. And they need to thrive, and they need to move, and they need to have change, and they change is inevitable. So like if we can embody and protect what's inside of us and what our body is asking for, just as we are protecting these wild spaces in the world, then maybe we can unify a little bit more and have a deeper understanding of why we're here on this planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a deeper story there, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
It does feel like there's greater connections than we always really understand how things connect.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And doing it together, like I said earlier, you know, humans are pack animals. So finding community within that is always the answer, and being together in real time.
So if people would like to know more about your work, do you have a reference point?
Yeah, I have actually two websites now, but my artistic work and my We Dances Movement Collaborative work is on mandyherrick.com. And then my creative teaching work with dance teaching work is on bodiesofwater.org.
Well, and it sounds like you really are staying active in kind of, I almost want to say, these two different branches, you know, both the artistic part and the functional part.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's what keeps me engaged in both minds, you know, right brain, left brain a little bit, hoping to find a little balance. But I feel lucky, so, so lucky that I get to do what I do. You know, my family, we have thankfuls every night at the dinner table, and it's just like I'm just lots of times just thankful for my working body, my body that's still working, you know. Is, you know, there's aches and pains here and there, but it's like I'm just so grateful I have a body that I can connect with and that moves.
Well, and it does seem like your work is sort of leading edge, and yet at the same time, I want to say a growing interest or a growing area. Thoughts on that? Do you see that? Do you see more and more interest?
In myself? In like where I'm...
In somatics, in movement, in
yeah.
either aspect, the functional or the artistic.
The somatic world is growing for sure, and it's showing up more in different healing modalities. The word is out there. I see it even in dance departments more and more now, too, that they have kind of a somatic education component to their majors. And that's, like, so niche. But in the, like, rest of us world, yeah, I think it's exciting that we are really realizing the potential of honoring the body with the mind more, either in mental health practices or in the fitness world or just in health in general. It's exciting to see it grow, for sure.
And environmental. You know, that's just kind of an interesting piece, too, the environmental piece that you bring, as far as, you know, reclaiming spaces, mm-hmm. or, you know, some of the work. I think there was a presentation around plastic. You know, I think, again, bringing information to people in a different way.
Yeah, totally. And, I mean, I didn't talk about politics, but I won't talk about politics, but but that you can send a message through dance. It's not just pretty turns and pretty things to look at and how cool things are. Like, the body is a tool to send a message. We all have bodies. What are we going to say to the world with our bodies, you know? Whether it's what you wear or how you are on the street, how you carry your body in space. Man, like, alignment and that alone. How you walk down the street. Are you slumping? Are you reaching with your chest? Are you just reaching with your head? How are your hips moving? Like, all that is a message. Whether you're aware of it or not, but in an artistic sense, an intentional way, yeah, there's just so much to say, so much messaging we can say. We did a piece on bringing plastic in, and I didn't talk too much about the wetland piece, but, like, specifically when you put artistic movement in a space like a wetland, I didn't even notice this wetland before. And now I'm like, wow, juxtaposed against something that's familiar to me. Yeah, what's that takeaway? What is that question that I have now, you know? And that's a growing sense of, like, our relationships with things. We're all in this in a relationship way, you know, where it's not just we're not in vacuums.
And we're communicating all the time. The way we show up, I like the way you express that, just what we're wearing all the time. Yeah. We're communicating something. And it sounds like, too, I'm intrigued about the energetics work of, like, reclaiming some of these spaces. And what does that do when we bring a new sense of communication, which is expression, which is life in a way, to a space that has not been previously seen before?
Yeah. That is so exciting to me. It is just, yeah, so exciting.
Your eyes twinkle when you talk about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, our relations, how we're relating to our environment is a constant question, whether it's, yeah, just a beautiful meadow or if it's just this, like, corner of a back alley or it's, you know, behind a cafe or it's, like, next to your car, something that's ordinary and mundane. How do we find the extraordinary in that?
So what's next for you? Yeah, projects coming up?
Yeah, actually, We Dance has just did a project in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and we're kind of needing to come back together to see where we're headed next. We have some projects that we've started. We worked on the Mapledale Dam last year in May, and we want to keep continuing that awareness about the dam projects in this area where a lot of the dams are being decommissioned.
And has had a huge impact on the community.
Yes, it's a huge topic, a little bit controversial, in fact. And so how do we bring movement and people to those places to just bring awareness? You don't even have to have a political side to it, but, like, just to say, like, this was here for so long. This dam served a purpose. It's going to be going away. And what does that mean? So I hope we can start working on that project again soon.
Well, I would look forward to seeing that. And I look forward to seeing what you bring forward. I appreciate your innovative efforts. And I guess let's all just go, you know, dance and move and see, you know, bring ourselves fully to
life.
That's
right. Great. So. Absolutely.
Website one more time if people want to reach
out. Yeah, mandyherrick.com and bodiesofwatermovementarts.org. I'm also on Instagram, Mandy J. Herrick Dance.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for coming in, Mandy.
Thanks, Kayleen. Uh-huh.